If you're the type of person who wants data, not assumptions, Prenuvo's whole body scan gives you a deep understanding of your health. Screen for over 500 conditions, including many cancers, autoimmune disorders, neurodegenerative diseases, and more. Add blood panels to test over 80 biomarkers, and you've got information about your body you may never have had before. Book your scan at Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Hey there, it's Jill Schlesinger. I'm launching a brand new show. It's called Money Moves. Follow and listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Takes a shot, runs into the box, shot, score!
It's time for Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
Tune in as Jason Longshore gives you insight and analysis on the beautiful game, including headlines from around the world of soccer.
Rebound, score!
This is Atlanta Soccer Tonight, brought to you by your local Ford dealer and Firehouse Subs. Enjoy more subs, save more lives.
Atlanta Soccer Tonight is on Sports Radio 92.9, The Game. Here's Jason Longshore.
Let's kick it. Atlanta Soccer Tonight is live on 92.9, The Game and the Odyssey app. I'm Jason Longshore. We talk soccer in Atlanta, Georgia, the Southeast, the United States, the Western Hemisphere, the entire planet. That's how this game is. And we have to talk about all of it for it all to make sense. That's what we try to do on AST. Make everything make sense. I wish I could make Atlanta United's lack of scoring make sense. We can talk about it, and we're going to. We can dig into it. We can find some reasons. But it doesn't make much sense. We can talk about this last week for Atlanta United that saw a win in the Open Cup and then a very frustrating loss to Nashville over the weekend. And now the New England Revolution come to town, one of the more efficient attacking teams. We'll talk about what Tata Martino had to say today in Marietta. We'll talk about what Cooper Sanchez had to say as well. We're also going to bounce around the game as a whole tonight. We're going to talk about NWSL Columbus. Has officially been announced as a league member alongside Atlanta. Lots to get into there. We're going to talk about a couple other maybe big picture items. We'll talk about MLS, what's going on around the league as a whole, but we're going to get into coaching and whether coaches get too much criticism, whether they get any credit. We're going to get into all that. Some comments out of Argentina really stuck with me after. The Argentine media can be interesting, let's just say. And a coach hit back at it. We're going to talk about that. We're going to get into what's on tap as well. We're going to look ahead to some youth development conversations. Got some clips for you there, too. And then we'll get into the 3-4-3. We always end with a little bit of structure. Y'all know how this goes by now. But let's talk Atlanta United. Yes, we have to. It was not a fun Saturday night at the Benz. It was a really fun Saturday as a whole for me. I had a chance to call two academy games in the morning, planning on calling Atlanta United 2 from Mercedes-Benz Stadium. The team was in Chicago, but traffic was kind of having different thoughts on Saturday. I don't know if any of you got stuck in the chaotic traffic that was going on late in the afternoon. I think there were three accidents from Marietta to Mercedes-Benz Stadium in the 3 o'clock hour. It's crazy. I've never seen it take that long for this trip, but it did. So we didn't get to do the broadcast on the SDH network of Atlanta United 2. They were dominant in Chicago, just like the U16s were dominant against Charlotte. The first team was not able to continue the dominance. They were good for about 30 minutes. And I know, and look, this happens when a team's not playing well. And I think this sport specifically can lead to a lot of interpretation of how a game goes because you're not able to define things purely by numbers. You just can't. Anybody who tells you that is either intentionally misleading you or they don't really get it either. Numbers can help tell a story in soccer, but there is a lot of feel. There is a lot of experience. There's a lot of having gone through it. And if you try to say that Atlanta was not good at all for any portion of this match, that's not true. I said Atlanta was the better team for the first 30 minutes. Tata Martino said the same thing today. Numbers back that up. Now, were they the better team by a gigantic margin? No, they weren't, because they didn't create enough. And that's what we're going to get into. But were they the better team for the first 30? Yeah. And that's a large portion of the first half. And this is not the first time this has happened. And it's also not the first time that you didn't score first. Only one time have you scored the first goal. And the first goal is so critical in this game. Goals change games. It's a cliche. It's also a factual statement. Everything changes when a goal is scored. That's the maybe the beauty and also the maddening aspect of the sport at times. Because at 0-0, anything can happen. Even if you're getting outplayed, you can get a goal against the run of play, and it can feel very different. We saw that in Chicago, for example. Atlanta was the better team in the first portion of that match. They conceded. Chicago felt very different after they had the lead. Atlanta felt very different when they were trailing. Now, they responded pretty well in that game. In Chattanooga, they gave up an early goal. They responded very well. They grabbed control back of that game very quickly. Now, yes, this was against an MLS Next Pro side. Yes, they are not at the same level of Chicago or of Nashville. Absolutely, those are valid points. But the team responded well to that moment. Against Nashville, they were the better team. They did not score. Nashville started to grow into it. I said it on the call on Saturday night. I went back and double-checked. You could feel the game turning. You could feel the anxiousness. You could feel the concern. You could feel maybe some of the PTSD popping up of Atlanta United worrying about conceding first again. Well, then they did. Now, if you want to divide the game into thirds, 30 minutes, and then the 15 minutes around halftime, and then the last 30. Atlanta was the better team for the first 30. Not by a wide margin, but they were the better team. The middle 30, the 15 on either side of halftime, pretty even, I'd say. I don't think either team really had the control. I think both teams had chances. I think Nashville had fewer of them, but better ones. And I think Atlanta maybe had a little bit more in quantity, but not quite as high of a number in terms of ranking in terms of quantity, or sorry, in quality. Well, once Nashville got the first goal, you could feel it, you could see it, and you could quantify it. Atlanta was done, and that's a problem. Atlanta had the ball for this match, but Nashville had the game. It's not the same thing, and I'm all about possession. I'm all about having possession to control games. The problem is Atlanta's having possession, and they're even having possession and field position, but they're not controlling games because they're not scoring goals, and they're not threatening teams to score goals consistently. Tata Martino said it after the match. Not even in my worst nightmares did I think we would have the start that we've had so far. I agree. And Naomi High, he had a chance to hear it on the full-time report. I had a chance to talk to him, Madison Cruz and I, in the locker room. And Anaya was really direct. He said, when we build up, we use many players in the build-up. We don't have many players in the final third. That's something Tata Martino talked about today. There is not really a good reason for that in terms of the physical side of it. Cooper Sanchez, Jay Fortune, Matias Galarza. I think when the team was playing well, they were involved in the buildup and then they were getting forward. Cooper had a good chance. Jay Fortune had a good chance. Matias Galarza, I thought, was dangerous throughout the game. But as the game went on, and I think as the game turned from Atlanta in control and being the better team to the game being 50-50, I think you start to see the team tighten up. You see the team stop being as expansive. You see the team being more careful. And that shows up in these kinds of situations. Atlanta had 21 crosses that produced zero danger. Mihai talked about it. He said 4 or 5 times we crossed the ball parallel to goal and no one was there. The buildup is working. The problem is that by the time the ball gets forward, you still have builders in the back. And I think that increases or it becomes more of an issue as the game goes on. That's a problem. Cooper Sanchez spoke to the media today, and I asked him because he's a player who has not typically been this guy. He's not a guy who is a 10. He's not a guy who's been an attack-minded midfielder. He said it himself. He's generally somebody who's comfortable sitting deeper and playing simple, playing a lot of 1-2 touch. Well, the game needs him to be higher up the field. He's trying to do that. I love what we're seeing from Cooper Sanchez this season because he is a player who is trying to adapt to what the team needs and trying to figure out how to best help the team. And he's doing this in his first full season with the first team. Here's what Cooper had to say today about what his thoughts were coming into the season.
Honestly, like going into this year, I set a goal for myself of 5 starts for the entire season. So to, you know, be at this point is obviously like mind-blowing to me. If you were asking me at the start of the year, I would say no chance. So I think that's just a testament to, you know, the work that I put in preseason and the coaching staff having the trust in me to, you know, keep starting me. And I think this team, even though we're not getting results, we're together and we're on the right track, and, you know, results will come.
I love that the belief is still there. And I love that this is an 18-year-old player who is about to graduate high school, who is standing up and saying those things. I love that. I love that he also said, you know, I felt at times during the weekend I was kind of far away and it was only Manu in the box. So I think I can help out and make more dangerous runs. It's an 18-year-old reading the game the way his manager is and trying to do the things that he is not, I don't want to say comfortable doing, because I think he's showing he is. Maybe he just hasn't been asked to do those things. His role has been different. He's trying to do what's right for the team and do things that maybe he hasn't done before. I thought Tata really broke it down well when talking today about the difference in the defensive half plus the first half of the attacking half. I mean, let's say 3/4 of the field. You can create numerical advantages in that. And Atlanta does a good job of it. And they get to the attacking third. And they've been doing that better and better and better as the season has gone on. The problem is the final third, you can't really create those numerical advantages as easily. So you've got to have good movement off the ball to try to find them. You've got to be creative. You've got to dribble and beat people. And that was something that Nashville did well in terms of carrying the ball forward on the dribble. And Atlanta did not in that match on Saturday. You've got to find different ways to break down the team. You've got to find wall passes. You've got to find those 1-2s. And Atlanta hasn't been doing enough of those. So you've got New England Revolution coming to town tomorrow. They're 4-3, 12 points. They're 5th in the East. They're one of the most efficient finishing teams in the league. They lead MLS in goals per shot on target. 14 goals in 7 games, 10 different scorers. They beat Columbus coming from behind. This is a very good New England team led by Marko Mitrović. Carlos Hill converted a penalty in the 85th minute to help them get that win in that one. Dor Turgeman, who lit Atlanta up last year, he equalized that match in the 54th minute. It's a team that knows how to win tight matches. It is a team that hasn't been good on the road this year. That helps Atlanta in the situation. But this is a New England team that isn't trying to dominate you. They just need one look per half. Again, they're efficient. They're very good at protecting leads. They also don't necessarily press very high. And that was something that jumped out to me about Nashville. Nashville, this season, has generally been a very high-pressing team. They chose not to be against Atlanta. And I think because they weren't afraid of what Atlanta does in the attacking third. I talked about it on the call. It is a big conversation point. Lotte Lott is not producing. He only had 17 touches on Saturday. There is a layered conversation to have here. It's not as simple as it's all on him. You've got to play him in situations. I've talked about this before. When you have the opportunity to play over the top or through and let him use his speed, I think that has to be an automatic green light to play that ball. Atlanta hasn't done that at times, and that's something that needs to change. You've got to try to get what you can out of him on the field. Now, however, there is an issue with what he is giving you on the field. The movement has to be better. The control has to be better. It's his turnover that leads to goal number one for Nashville. He needs to be higher up the field. And I know you want to find ways to get him involved and have him combine, but he's not then getting into those moments. I think some of the ideas of players not being on the end of crosses or passes, yeah, he's involved in that as well. And he's the nine. Like, that shouldn't happen. It's a layered conversation, but it is the most important conversation about Atlanta United in 2026 to me. When the team concedes goals, it usually comes from the team not being dangerous the other way. I think there are lots of red herrings in this conversation about, oh, it's Lucas Ojos, or oh, it's Juan Bettercall, or oh, it's this defender or that defender. To me, it's not about that side of the team at all. And everything is interconnected. Don't forget that. The team defends from the players up front, and it attacks with the players in the back. I think when Tomas Jacob and Elias Paez are impactful in the attacking half, that's when the team looks its best. But this is a team that is being held back by its lack of creating threat. Not even creating goals. Just let's go to the first step, creating threat. They're not creating expected goals, which measures quality of threat to a degree. They're not creating enough chances. They're not threatening teams enough. Teams know they can sit, they can absorb, and then they can go the other way. And at some point, that's going to push the door in. It's got to change. And I don't know exactly what the button is to push for that to change. But you've got to be more dangerous in the attack for anything else to work. It's not going to be from sitting back deeper to defend. It's not going to be from loading up the numbers behind the ball. It's not going to be purely from counterattacking. You've got to create more chances, better chances, and you've got to be threatening to the opponent. And right now, this team is not. They've got to find a way to do that tomorrow night. We'll be talking about all of it starting at 6:30, Five Stripes Countdown, kickoff at 7:40. The game is on FS1 as well as Apple TV. And as always, it is here on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Coming up next, big NWSL news out of Columbus. Atlanta's NWSL team coming into the league in 2028. Now we know who's coming with them. We'll talk about it on the other side of the break on Atlanta Soccer Tonight on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
Back to more of Atlanta Soccer Tonight with Jason Longshore
on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back. It's Atlanta Soccer Tonight live on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. I'm Jason Longshore. And I feel like I'm going to get yelled at for stealing a segment, borrowing a segment from The Intersection. Noel White's going to be probably yelling at me on the text thread here in just a little bit. I don't have the little bell for the women's sports boutique that Noel has started on The Intersection, but I would be ringing that right now if I did, because we're going to talk some NWSL. And the reason why is Atlanta, we know, is coming into the league in 2028. As team number 17, kind of appropriate with the 17s and all of those connections for Atlanta and Atlanta United. Well, Columbus is going to be team number 18. They are coming in alongside Atlanta in 2028. Let's talk about kind of how all this came together, what it means for the league, what's going on in Columbus, you know, a market that is a really good fit, I think, for NWSL. It's been a really good fit for Major League Soccer. It was one of the original MLS cities, which was a big surprise back in 1996. And the reason why that it became one of the inaugural MLS cities was because of the local support. A huge number of season ticket deposits were put down. And Columbus has a stake to being one of the great soccer cities in the United States. They absolutely do. Now, we also remember that Anthony Precourt bought the Crew with the intention all along of moving them. And in a way, he did. It didn't really happen in a normal relocation situation like we've seen in other sports, like we're about to see in the WNBA, for example, with Connecticut going to Houston. We've seen it, obviously, with the Cleveland Browns going to Baltimore and then reemerging as kind of themselves, but kind of not. We might see this with Seattle in the NBA here at some point with the Sonics reemerging. Well, Columbus kind of reemerged immediately. They spawned immediately. So they didn't really move, although on paper they did, because Anthony Precourt owned a team and then he had a team in Austin. Columbus didn't miss a season or anything like that. It just transferred over. The players transferred over. And yeah, it was a weird situation all the way around. But the Haslam family, who own the Crew, and they own a stake in the Milwaukee Bucks, and they've been very important here. Pete Edwards is part of this. Nationwide Insurance is part of this as well. They've all done really right by the Columbus Crew. They built a stadium downtown, a great stadium. Columbus was one of the first markets to build a soccer-specific stadium, the old historic Crew Stadium, which was not fancy by any stretch. Lamar Hunt put his money down, and he made it work on his own because he couldn't get any help to do it. And it was a proof of concept. Well, by doing that, he elevated the Crew. He elevated soccer in Columbus. And now they have one of the great stadiums in the league. One of the best stadiums in the league. It's up there for me alongside Nashville and Cincinnati and Atlanta. Atlanta's kind of in a different tier in terms of size, but as great stadiums in Major League Soccer. Well, it's going to be a great stadium in the NWSL as well. Jessica Berman, the commissioner of the league, held the press conference today, made it formal, mentioned the ownership group. They put down $205 million to join the NWSL. That is a league record. It tops the $165 million that Arthur Blank paid to bring Atlanta's club in. They're going to play at Scott's Miracle-Gro Field downtown. It's a big deal for the NWSL. That amount of money, that's a big deal. Columbus has earned this, absolutely. But there's a little bit to say about how they got there, and there's a little bit of a compare and contrast here. Columbus getting an NWSL team, once it was obvious that the Haslams were interested, all the infrastructure was there. It was never really in doubt that they were going to make this happen. There is a question, though, about how they've gotten to some of the elements of it in the community. And let's talk about that, because I think there is a very important way to contrast this with what Atlanta's done. So Monday night, and this is what paved the way for this announcement today, the Columbus City Council voted 5-3 with one abstention to approve a public funding deal. The city and Franklin County each putting in $25 million. That's funded by ticket surcharges at the Crew Stadium. On paper, that works. This is for the training ground. But the site for the training facility, McCoy Park, on the southwest side of Columbus, that neighborhood had already been promised a community park. Renderings existed, plans existed, and then those plans got replaced to build a training ground for a professional soccer team. Now, I'm not one to not talk about all of the other benefits you get from having a professional sports team. We can do a history lesson about why Atlanta is what it is today because of Atlanta building what was Atlanta Stadium at the time in the mid-60s to become a major league city. The perception absolutely was important for the city of Atlanta back then. Now, this is not for the stadium. This is for a training ground. There's a lot of conversations about how this could have been done differently. It wasn't handled very well. You can build a great team and you can build a great training ground, but you can still do some of the community element wrong. And I think Columbus did that. The most pointed voice in the council chamber, it wasn't someone who voted no. Councilwoman Tiara Ross voted yes and still said on the record, this is not how we build trust. The administration should be ashamed of itself for the blatant disregard of the people of this community. Shannon Harden, the council president, also a yes vote, said that he wished the location could have been different, but the site was already in the bid before the council was brought in. This is the stuff that's got to be better. The vote passed, the team's coming. Now the neighborhood, Southwest Columbus, there has to be a real conversation about how this is made right. Now let's compare that to what happened with Atlanta NWSL's training ground. That vote, there wasn't any contentiousness to it. 7-0. That happened yesterday. It flew under the radar. Unanimous to approve it. A&B Sports and Entertainment developing the 34-acre site. It's a half mile down the road from Atlanta United's current training ground. It's going to be four full fields, two half fields, 38,000 square feet of facility space. And as part of the deal, because this piece of land was going to be an IKEA at one point, as part of the deal, the city of Marietta is getting 10 acres of land for a public park. That's all part of this deal to make it all work. There was a thought from the jump to make it a win-win for everybody. That's something that is very important to note here. Atlanta got this process right. And I think the community at Franklin Gateway is going to benefit from having these two training grounds there, the development that goes around that, and now a public park there as well that doesn't exist currently. Doing it right is important, and that's a key element to this. Let's go back to the expansion fee. $205 million for Columbus to join the NWSL. Let's talk about some context here. Angel City, when they came into the league, $2 million expansion fee. Boston, which started this year, $53 million. Denver also started this year. By the time Denver came to the table after Boston had already been approved to start the same year, Denver paid double, $110 million. Atlanta, coming in 2028, announced last November, $165 million. Columbus, $205 million. From $2 million to $205 million in less than a decade. That trajectory doesn't happen if the league is not delivering from a business perspective. And that's something that Arthur Blank has been really key in talking about. Professional women's sports will be successful when it is treated as a business. The best teams, we're talking WNBA, we're talking professional volleyball, we're talking the NWSL, we're talking clubs around the world, in basketball and in soccer, the best ones are the ones that get the business right and they treat it as a business. If you treat it as the right thing to do, in air quotes, if you treat it as a charity, it's not going to be run properly for the players, for the staff, for the community, for the city, for the fans. This is a transformation in women's professional soccer in the United States. To go from a $2 million expansion fee to $205 million is a wild ride. That is an absolute transformation. So now Atlanta's got a rival from day one in the NWSL with Columbus coming in. The Crew and Atlanta United, they both have given their fan bases, which some will carry over onto the NWSL side as well. High-stakes matches. I mean, I remember the playoff games in 2023, some of my favorite matches in Atlanta United history. So they're both going to come into the NWSL same time, similar color schemes as the MLS teams as well. The names are going to be a little different. That's a whole other conversation we'll have to get into at another point. But coming in the same year, they're always linked. Atlanta and Minnesota is always linked in MLS because of that. I think it's really important that the NWSL is going to Columbus. I think it's really important that they're going to be in a top-notch facility. I think it's really important that they have quality ownership who are going to invest and, again, going to run this as a business. I do think it's important to talk about that community aspect of it because you're already starting off on the wrong foot in part of your city. That needs to be rectified. It shouldn't have come to that. It should have been handled much smoother. It should have been handled like Atlanta did, frankly. You make the deal, you get it done, and you create a win-win for everybody involved. And Atlanta has been able to do that with that 10 acres of land going to a public park, as opposed to Columbus, which is essentially taking what was going to be a public park and making it a training facility. The training facility is going to benefit the city. Professional sports benefit cities. It's not always a straight line on dollars and cents. It's not always a straight line in this could have been this and now it's not and we're mad and professional sports, blah, 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 blah. No. There's a lot of perception. There's a lot of community that is built through sport. There's a lot of role models that are created through sport. And I think in the women's space on the professional sports side, it's even more important. So there's going to be a lot of benefit to the communities of Columbus. This needs to be rectified so it doesn't linger. And I hope that the ownership group and I hope that the new team there handles it well. I'm excited to see what's coming in Atlanta. There's going to be a groundbreaking ceremony on Friday for the new facility. We'll have plenty of coverage both on socials on 92.9 The Game and on the SDH network. So lots of stuff to come. Can't wait for both of these teams to get on the field. And I can't wait to see this league just continue to grow. The league has kind of went from being a patient small builder to a league that cities are competing to join at this point. It's very, very cool to see this happen for the league. It's a good day for women's soccer. Two of the best soccer cities in the country are now building NWSL teams at the same time. When we come back, we're going to talk about something that doesn't get enough airtime. How hard it is to actually be a coach and what a head coach in Argentina said this week that I think every soccer fan worldwide needs to hear. All that's coming up next on Atlanta Soccer Tonight on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
Here's something you may not know. Only 14% of cancers in the U.S. are caught through routine screenings. Prenuvo's whole body MRI may help close that gap. Screening for over 500 conditions, including most solid tumors, all in under an hour. Prenuvo's body panels also test over 80 biomarkers for a deeper understanding of your health. No radiation, no contrast. Book your scan at prenuvo.com. That's prenuvo.com.
Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
When it comes to the world of soccer, we've got you covered.
This is Atlanta Soccer Tonight with Jason Longshore
on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back. It's Atlanta Soccer Tonight, live on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. I'm Jason Longshore. Let's get into something that I don't think gets talked about enough. And this honestly can cross over any sport. Obviously, this is Atlanta Soccer Tonight, so we're going to talk soccer, but this could happen in any sport, honestly, and it does. And I think it's something that needs to be called out. The coaching job, just the job of being a head coach or a manager, depending on the sport, whatever you want to call it. I don't get hung up. Like in soccer, you generally call them a manager. I know in like high school and college and youth, it's called a head coach sometimes. Some people get really bent out of shape both ways. I could care less. You know what I'm talking about. The job itself, it's really difficult. The job itself doesn't get enough respect. We never talk about what it actually costs the people that are involved in it. The way we talk about the job never really matches the reality of doing it. Here's the entry point into this conversation. This is why this is coming up with me tonight. Let's go to a media room in Argentina at the club called Banfield, which is where Eric Rometty came from when he came to Atlanta United. The argument goes a lot further than that. That's where we're going to start. Pedro Trolio, he is the manager of Banfield in the Argentine top flight, 61 years old. His career, he has managed in Argentina and Honduras and Peru, Ecuador. He has been a lot of different places. Won a title in Paraguay with Cerro Porteño. He was at Olimpia in Honduras for two different spells. He's managed against MLS clubs in the CONCACAF Champions Cup. Played for the Argentine national team as a player. He won titles with River Plate. Played in quite a few different places as well. Played in Italy for a long time. Scored a goal in the World Cup in 1990 against the Soviet Union, to go back to those days. But he is a manager now. He's at Banfield. And over the weekend, Banfield drew scoreless with Independiente Rivadavia. And afterward, Trolio sat in front of a group of reporters. And this group of reporters has been very, very hard on him. And again, this is somebody who's been managing since 2004. This is somebody who played over 500 games as a professional. This is somebody who represented their country in a World Cup. Obviously knows the game. That doesn't mean you win every game. That doesn't mean you win every championship. But it means you know what you're doing. It means you deserve some respect. And Trolio hasn't been getting that. He wasn't having it when he sat in front of the reporters. He told them directly. It was in Spanish, and I'll paraphrase for you. He said, look, you can criticize. You can have opinions about the game. All that's fine. But you do not, you should not call for someone's head. You should not be calling publicly for someone to lose their job. You don't run a campaign to take away a person's livelihood. That's why I hate when somebody starts the hashtag fire so-and-so or hashtag so-and-so out. It's despicable, honestly. It's in bad taste. You can feel like somebody's not doing a great job. You can feel like whatever. That's fine. You can have your opinions. But yeah, when you start campaigning to take away somebody's livelihood, this is a whole different thing. Trolio went on. He said he shows up at the club every day. He works. He also said he's not being paid right now. That's another big part of this. He said he puts his chest out for the club every single day without complaining. And these people are campaigning for him to be fired. And he's not even being paid at the moment because the club is operating under severe financial constraints. Their top scorer last season, loaned out, not even sold, loaned out for $100,000. The roster, it's a bunch of low-cost signings. It's youth players. Trolio came in. He kept them in the first division, kept them from getting relegated. He won their Clásico, their rivalry game against Lanús, which is a very good team. He's built some real stability out of thin air. Now they're mid-table. Mid-table. When on the financial table, they're not mid-table. They're broke table. And the local press is running a campaign to push him out of his job. He's not being paid. They're trying to push him out of his job. His answer is, look, I show up. I'm doing the job. He wasn't asking for sympathy. He's talking about the job. He's talking about how hard it is. He's talking about, hey, let's be human beings here. Let's understand this. He's coaching at a cash-strapped club in one of the world's most pressure-filled soccer environments. He's not being paid, and he's still the one showing up to face the cameras after a draw. It's chaos. And this is not just about Pedro Trolio. This is not just about Argentina. This runs through the sport everywhere right now. The culture of this game, and we all love it, and we get excited, and we get embedded in it, and we get riled up about it, and it's why we keep coming back. It's why I do the show. It's why I get so excited to have a day like last Saturday where I called three different games. I love the sport, but there are things about it that drive me crazy. This is one of those things. The culture of the game exaggerates what coaches control, doesn't give them enough credit when it goes well, and then punishes them when the reality doesn't match the fiction. We talk about managers winning and losing games directly when in soccer, to be honest, managers have the least control over the winning and the losing. You don't have timeouts. You have limited substitutions. You have limited stoppages of play where you can do something that you can impact what happens on the field. I have this conversation about basketball all the time because I do think there's a lot of similarities between the way a game flows. In basketball, your team's struggling down the stretch. You're getting outplayed. What do? Call timeout. Soccer coaches don't have that. You can't do that. So this idea that like managers win and lose games directly, no. They have the least control over any other in soccer than any other sport. Managers are often put up as the main character. They're the ones who got to go talk to the media. They're the ones who have to always answer all the questions, even when they don't have the answers because it's on the players and their performances. And then we get surprised when the managers can't live up to this fairy tale that is created about them. Look, the reality, it's far less romantic. Players decide games. The sport is continuous. Coaches, they can't stop play. They can't govern individual decisions. You can't send a play in. You know, you can't do these things. the money that teams spend matters. Teams that spend more money generally win more, flat out. You can measure that. It's not hard to find. Teams that have more money to spend and spend more money generally win more games, flat out. The quality of the squads matter. Injuries, ownership instability, transfer chaos, all that matters. But the default standard in the discourse, in the conversation, is the manager is responsible for everything when it's bad. And when it's good, the players are responsible for everything. That's not accountability. Just being convenient. Sacking the coach, hashtag so-and-so out, hashtag fire so-and-so. It's the sport's most ritualized response, even when it changes the story without changing the conditions. The sacrifice that coaches have to put up with hides all of these constraints in actually being able to compete. Let's talk about some real context. Two recent examples. Oliver Glasner at Crystal Palace. On the eve of a match, they sold at the end of the window Mark Gahey to Manchester City, the captain of Crystal Palace. Sold him, leaving him with a severely depleted squad. He didn't dodge responsibility. He explained it. He said the club was abandoned by the ownership. It wasn't an excuse. It's the context. They sold the captain day before a game. Yep. And it had been dragging on for a while. Yeah. What's he supposed to do? Luis Enrique at PSG. I mean, I'll always remember this in the Champions League group stage. It's a game that his team lost, and they dominated statistically. They created more chances. They controlled more of the game. They still lost the game. His response, he cursed on air just because of frustration. He was just hated life at the moment. It shows the fundamental frustration of the job. You can build the right system. You can train it right during the week. You can prepare everything correctly. You can do everything that your job asks you to do. And the ball can still hit a post. The referee can make a call. The scoreboard says you failed. And then you got to go in front of the cameras and explain it. Yeah, it's the job. You design systems for a sport that control from the coach's side, it's always partial. Outcomes are often shaped by randomness. Again, hitting a post, crazy referee decision, ball bounces funny. It happens, a deflection. But the coach is still the one who's got to go answer for all of it. Let's go to Chelsea. Let's go to Tottenham. Let's go to Real Madrid. Chelsea have had more managers in the last 4 years than most clubs have had in a decade. What has that gotten them? Not a lot. It got them a Club World Cup. I don't think having all these different coaches got them the Club World Cup, but they got that at least. We'll talk about what it's gotten Chelsea lately, later in the show, but oof. Each coach who comes in, it's a reset. Each one who leaves, it's a scapegoat. The structural problems at the club where they are broke, and it's looking really bleak for Chelsea financially. The ownership who came in with Todd Boehly and his crew, bills are going to have to get paid here shortly. I don't know how that's going to get fixed. Changing the next coach isn't going to fix it. And then you make it worse every time you change the coach that way. The next man through the door inherits that same chaos with a shorter runway and a fan base who's already got the hashtag ready to go. Probably already have the tweets and drafts. Tottenham Hotspur, same story. The carousel there, it's been running so long since Maurizio Pochettino left that it's hard to even evaluate any individual coach's work with any honesty. It's a coach who is defensive who comes in, like Jose Mourinho. Then it's a coach who wants to be expansive, like Ange Postecoglou. Then it's back to defensive. Then it's, let's have five different coaches in a season. I'm exaggerating a little bit, but maybe they get there. Who knows? It's ridiculous. But the people who create the conditions that these coaches have to work in, they don't have to go out and speak to the media. Real Madrid, I mentioned it earlier in the year, Xabi Alonso, they moved on from him way too early because it became the easy thing to do. Fire the coach. Everybody's yelling, fire the coach. Fire the coach. Did it help him? Nope. Nope, it did not. Liam Rossignol, he's the head coach at Chelsea right now. He talked about this before he got the job. He talked about just how difficult this is, really trying to be honest, trying to build a real culture, trying to have a very clear, articulate philosophy about how he wants his team to play. He doesn't want his team to not be scoring goals right now. He's not coaching them to do that. he's a manager with genuine quality. The job he did at Strasbourg in France was outstanding. But now his job's in jeopardy at Chelsea because of things that are outside of his control. And it's going to affect him. Wilfried Nancy. People think Wilfried Nancy's not a good manager now because of what happened at Celtic, which was outside of his control. He had a bunch of those games that Luis Enrique talked about where they dominated, they created more chances, they missed shots, they hit posts, and then ultimately, because the noise got very loud, the club did not stick by him after putting him into a bad situation. Now people are like, oh, maybe he's not that good of a coach. Well, I think Columbus Crew and maybe some of the struggles that they're having this year show you that he was a very good coach. It's not always on the coach. To get the best out of a head coach in this sport, you have to give them time because it takes time to see what their true impact is going to be because their impact over 90 minutes is smaller than any other sport. You have to see their impact over a season, over multiple seasons, to make a true determination of that direction of travel, where the team is going, are they getting better? Those aren't conversations that you can tell from 90 minutes. Those aren't conversations you can tell from a month. There has to be a different conversation about this. And look, I know I'm fighting a losing battle here. I know the hashtags are already going like, fire this guy, fire that guy. I know, I get it. I understand. That's some of the nature of social media. It's some of the nature of the lack of patience in humanity these days. That's real. It's not going to get any easier for coaches. But I think they get too much criticism, not enough credit. And I think people who campaign publicly, whether we're talking pundits, whether we're talking influencers, whatever, people who campaign for other people to lose their jobs over things that in many ways are outside of their control, it's the worst. Be better. Do better. Let's not do those things. Let's not have these conversations. Let's give credit. And also, yeah, over time, let's say, look, it's not getting better. Maybe it's time to move on here for both sides because it's not moving in the right direction. It's not going to help anybody. But that happens over time. Not a knee-jerk reaction. Not a hashtag. Not noise. We'll see. I have a feeling it's only going to get worse. I don't know when it's going to get better. Some clubs, the ones who have the patience, I think are rewarded by it. And they show you that it should be better. It's just not for enough clubs. But usually the ones who are having these problems are the ones who are the worst run. When we come back, we're going to talk about Major League Soccer. We'll reset. We'll talk Atlanta and New England tomorrow. We'll talk about what's kind of next for the Five Stripes. But we'll also talk about what San Jose did. We'll talk about Vancouver. We'll talk about the Eastern Conference. All coming up on the other side of the break. More Atlanta Soccer tonight to come on Atlanta on AST on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
If you're the type of person who wants data, not assumptions, Prenuvo's whole body scan gives you a deep understanding of your health. Screen for over 500 conditions, including many cancers, autoimmune disorders, neurodegenerative diseases, and more. Add blood panels to test over 80 biomarkers, and you've got information about your body you may never have had before. Book your scan at Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Drink up, baby. Fantasy Football Happy Hour is here to get you wins and have some laughs. Matthew Berry here, and my podcast, Fantasy Football Happy Hour, has the sleepers, busts, and starts and advice you need to win your league. We're diving into the tape, we're crunching the numbers to bring you sleepers, busts, weekly start sit advice. Whether you're defending a title or desperately avoiding last place, I've got you covered every single weekday. The bar is open. It's Fantasy Football Happy Hour with Matthew Berry, wherever you get your podcasts.
Takes a shot, runs into the box, shot,
score! It's time for Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
Tune in as Jason Longshore gives you insight and analysis on the beautiful game, including headlines from around the world of soccer.
Rebound, score!
This is Atlanta Soccer Tonight, brought to you by your local Ford dealer and Firehouse Subs. Enjoy more subs, save more lives.
Atlanta Soccer Tonight is on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Here's Jason Longshore.
Welcome back. Hour number two of Atlanta Soccer Tonight. It's still cool that I get to say that each and every week. I'm Jason Longshore. Thanks for listening on 92.9 The Game, the Odyssey app. If you're listening to the podcast edition, welcome. We're available at any time on demand, wherever you get your podcasts, Off the Woodwork, also on the Odyssey app. You're going to have a lot of content coming up as we get closer to the World Cup. We are 50 days away tomorrow from the tournament getting started. That's crazy. 55 days from the first game in Atlanta, if I can do math properly. It's wild. That's where we are. But we're going to have a lot coming up on AST, on Off the Woodwork, on 92.9 The Game, on the Odyssey app, on the social medias at 92.9 The Game, Longshore as well. Lots to get into. Let's talk about Major League Soccer match day 8. 56 goals across the weekend. 56. Averaging nearly 4 per game. That's a lot to get into. We'll close the segment by kind of bringing it back to Atlanta and talking about tomorrow night with the New England Revolution coming to town. But let's go to the headline story of the weekend for MLS. It was in Denver, Colorado. Had everything. Colorado Rapids hosting Inter Miami at Mile High for the 30th anniversary of the Rapids' first ever home match. 75,824 fans. Second biggest single game crowd in MLS history. Colorado played really well too. Rafael Navajo and homegrown Darren Yappe, they scored level at 2 apiece heading into the final stretch. And then Lionel Messi did what Lionel Messi does. Late dagger, 3 points for Miami. Colorado head coach Matt Wells, talking about coaches and sometimes the frustration of it, he said afterward, there's only one team on the pitch. Said it was a travesty they didn't win the game. He's not entirely wrong, but the scoreboard said Miami, and that's all that matters in the table. Messi at altitude in a huge venue in front of 75,000 people. Whatever you want to say about MLS and where it stands, like those kind of moments are real. That's a big deal. What's also a big deal? The San Jose earthquakes. Most inspiring story in MLS right now. It happened in LA. The result that gets the most attention, should get the most attention anyway, happened in LA, BMO Stadium. It wasn't even close. San Jose went into the stadium and handed LAFC a 4-1 loss. 8 domestic products in the starting lineup. A 20-year-old homegrown running the attack. Timo Werner, the only name in the group. Nico Chikaris, Oseni Boudou, Bo Leroux, all outstanding. San Jose, 7 wins out of 8. They're on top of the overall MLS table alongside Vancouver. This is year 2 for Bruce Arena. It's a rebuild of a club that had become irrelevant. What he's assembled, which did not cost a lot of money, by the way, and as I mentioned in the last segment, usually, and I think MLS might be a little bit of an exception to this because of the playoff nature, because of some of the travel and some of the other aspects of the league. If you spend more money, generally you win more. If you spend less money, generally you don't win as much. Bruce Arena is someone who is showing that they can beat the expectations. His team is not impressive on paper. His team is one of the lowest valued teams in terms of player values in the league. Everybody wants to call him Cinderella right now. I get it. But at some point, 7 wins and 1 loss is not a fairy tale. It's a statement. What he's doing is killing it. They didn't steal 4 points from LAFC over 2 weeks. They outplayed them. It's a different thing entirely. The San Jose team is for real. Now, we'll see if they can keep it up. Of course, they got to show that. But what they've shown so far has been incredibly impressive. What Vancouver has shown so far has been incredibly impressive. They beat Sporting Kansas City, who has not been in any remote way impressive this season. Vancouver beat them 3-0. More one-sided than the scoreline suggests. Expected goals were 4.3 to 0.3. Tomas Muller orchestrating in the attack. Emmanuel Sabi, Bruno Caicedo causing havoc. 3-goal lead before the half hour mark. Vancouver right now are on a historic pace. They're only the second team in MLS history to put up at least 22 goals in their first 8 games of a season. They are on pace at the moment for 89 points and 93 goals. Those would be all-time league records. This is more than just a month into the season. This is 8 games in. That, you know, it's a pace, and they haven't even gotten to double digits in games played yet, but yeah, it's impressive. They're not getting enough national attention. They're not in a major market. They're in a market that, frankly, has a lot of questions about it. They're trying to figure out the business side of what's going on in Vancouver right now, and they've got to figure that out for the club's long-term success. I want the Whitecaps to stay in Vancouver. I've enjoyed my time in Vancouver, the one time that I was there for Atlanta United back in 2019. I think it's a great city. I think it's a great soccer city. You got to have the right place to play, and right now they're paying a whole lot of money to play in a not-so-great venue at BC Place. That needs to change, or they need to find a way to build their own stadium, or there's going to be somebody else who is going to want to bring them to their market. And when you hear about things like Las Vegas talking about building a 50,000-seat soccer stadium as part of a gigantic development, it gets your attention. I don't want to see Vancouver end up there. I'd like to see Las Vegas come into MLS as an expansion team. But to be successful, as I talked about in the NWSL segment, the business has to be right. And right now, the business is not right in Vancouver. The soccer is absolutely right for the Whitecaps. The business is not in a good place for the Whitecaps. Let's bounce around the league. A few other things flagging my attention from match day 8. Montreal, they beat Red Bull New York 4-1. Craziness. Philippe Ulafroy. He took over last week as the interim manager. He said the two words that he gave the group before the match were smile and intensity. I don't know whether it's a new manager bounce or a real shift. We'll find out. But Prince Owusu was excellent. It keeps Montreal relevant at the moment. Toronto and Austin, chaos, 3-3. Crazy in Toronto. Atlanta goes to Toronto this weekend. Austin have now conceded a goal in the final 15 minutes 6 times this season. San Diego, they were one of the best stories in MLS last year. They are now winless in 6 matches since their CONCACAF Champions Cup run ended. It's a real hangover right now. They lost at RSL, another club that is developing a lot of young talent right now and flying at the moment. And Inter Miami, talked about it earlier. They made the move on from Javier Mascherano and didn't really affect them last week. We'll see if it affects them over time. Let's bring it back to Atlanta to close out this segment. Atlanta United, not good in the table at the moment. The table around the league has a bunch of stories moving in opposite directions. You got San Jose, Vancouver flying, New England's on 3 straight wins, Minnesota 3 straight wins. Atlanta 1-6-1, 4 points, 14th in the Eastern Conference. Home loss to Nashville over the weekend. 0 big chances from 55% possession. Yeah, that's not good. New England arrive at the Benz tomorrow. They are the most efficient finishing team in the league. They've won 3 straight. Carlos Heel, 5 goals and 5 assists and 11 career appearances against Atlanta. New England, once they've gotten a lead, they have not given up a lead all season long. Atlanta, 0-6 when conceding first. I mean, that makes it pretty clear, right? First goal is going to be critical for Atlanta. It makes it pretty clear after what Tata Martino said over the weekend. He feels like whenever the team concedes a goal, it's a knockout punch. I get it. We can sit here and say, ah, they're professional athletes. Shouldn't be like that. Ah, you know, give up one goal. That shouldn't decide everything. We can do all that all that we want. Facts are facts. When you're 0-6, when conceding first, when you're not creating big chances going the other way, when you're not scoring goals on a regular basis, yes, one goal conceded feels like it's the end of the game. That feeling, that perception, that right now is reality for Atlanta United. That has to change. I will reiterate what I said earlier. Atlanta United has to become more dangerous in the attack. That is the number 1, number 2, number 3, number 4, number 5 issue for this team right now. It is not about how they defend. It is not about the build-up play. It is not about the shape. It is not about style of play, which I don't even know what people are wanting to see different. It's not about any of those things. It's not. I'm sorry. It's not. I know we like to blame things. We like to yell and we like to stomp our feet and we like to create hashtags. I get it. Here's the reality. Atlanta United is not a dangerous attacking team right now. And until they are, it's very easy to play against them. You can keep numbers back. You don't have to be crazy and press high up the field, because when you press high up the field and it gets beaten by a team that builds up the play well, then you could give up better chances. Okay. You don't have to worry about that right now. You sit back. You do what Nashville did, which is generally a higher pressing team. They didn't do that against Atlanta. You sit back. You absorb some pressure. You wait till Atlanta punches themselves out. You go attack. Nashville did that. They sat back and they let Atlanta do what they wanted to do for 30 minutes. Then they started to step up and play, and Atlanta started to get a little worried. And then Nashville got the goal, which, yes, came from a turnover in the middle third. And that's ballgame. Everything about Atlanta United right now that is not working originates with the fact that they are not a threatening team in the attack. Until that changes, you can change goalkeepers, center backs, fullbacks, sixes. You can change shape. You can change tactics. You can change whatever the sliders are on the video game. You can change all that. It's not going to matter. You have to be more dangerous in the attack. That's it. And that's what it comes down to. And there's things that will create that. I think movement. I think being bold in the attack. I think taking chances in the attack. I think players winning their 1v1 duels. I think players finding combinations, movement, more movement, all of those things. And just converting, just executing, just converting your chances. You start to do that, this team looks a lot different. You don't, none of the rest of it matters. You've got to be more dangerous in the attack. We'll see if Atlanta United can do that tomorrow against a New England team that I think is going to sit back, give them a lot of possession, and eventually start to take some chances and open up as the game goes on. So if they're going to give you that, you need to punch them in the mouth, and you need to do it early. Pre-game show tomorrow, 6:30 for the Five Stripes Countdown with Abe Gordon and Madison Cruz. Kickoff 7:40. You can watch on Apple TV. You can watch on FS1. You can listen right here on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app, with Mike Conti and myself. But coming up next, we're going to talk about what's on tap, and we're going to go deep on youth development with some voices from inside Atlanta United that you might not know. We'll get into all of that on the other side of the break on AST on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
If you're the type of person who wants data, not assumptions, Prenuvo's whole body scan gives you a deep understanding of your health. Screen for over 500 conditions, including many cancers, autoimmune disorders, neurodegenerative diseases, and more. Add blood panels to test over 80 biomarkers, and you've got information about your body you may never have had before. Book your scan at Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back to more of Atlanta Soccer Tonight with Jason Longshore
on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back. It's Atlanta Soccer Tonight, live on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. And this segment is called What's on Tap. It's brought to you by Michelob Ultra, official beer sponsor of FIFA World Cup 26. I like to use this segment in a lot of different ways. We can do the easy way sometimes and look ahead to games coming up. We can do the thing that we're going to do over the next few weeks and start to look ahead to the World Cup. We'll do that. We'll do the stock what's on tap from time to time, because sometimes situations will dictate that. We're going to go a little bigger picture tonight. It's something that I think of as the future. Like, it's on tap. It's coming up. It's down the road. But it's starting to become visible right now in this country and in MLS and in the NWSL as well. We're going to talk about the men's side of it right now. Youth development. Not as just this abstract organizational philosophy, but something you can actually see in MLS every weekend. Something that Atlanta United has been building toward for years. We're just a couple months away from a World Cup on home soil that's going to introduce the sport to millions of new fans, to millions of new young soccer players. And yeah, that generation is going to grow up and they're going to have a different soccer experience than my generation did, than the current generation did. Everything evolves. Everything grows, I think, in the sport. The opportunities grow. But you're already starting to see things change. Sports Illustrated, they published their top five American players under the age of 21 in MLS this week. It's important to look at this list. Julian Hall from the Red Bulls, he's the number one player on that list. He's 18 years old. He's got 5 goals and 2 assists in 8 games this season. Michael Bradley has built the entire Red Bull attack around him rather than around veterans. Hall's delivered. Xavier Gozo at Real Salt Lake. We saw him firsthand here at the Benz. He's number two. He's a 19-year-old winger. He leads his club in dribbles and chances created. Adri Mamedi at Red Bull. He's 17 years old. He's next on the list. He's being linked to major clubs in Europe already. Tate Johnson in Vancouver. He's a 20-year-old starting left back on a team that's on a historic pace in the league. Duran Ferry at San Diego. He's 19. He's starting in goal. Didn't even talk about Kevin Sullivan. He's 15. He's already got a pre-contract with Manchester City. He hasn't played a whole lot this season on a bad Philadelphia team, but he's going to be on these lists. And there's a whole bunch of other young players. Cooper Sanchez, 18 years old, just turned 18, playing regularly, expected to come in and wanted to start 5 games this season. He's already past that number. MLS isn't waiting for young American players to grow into it now. They're here. And you're seeing teams that are taking the bold leap, taking the risk, taking the, I think, the bet that playing these players now, getting them experience, giving them starts, well, you've seen it pay off. Some of these players are already among the best players at their clubs. The World Cup's coming. And yeah, we're going to talk a lot about that over the next few months. And we're going to talk about what that means in 20 years for kids that fall in love with the game, you know, over the summer, maybe 10 years, maybe 15 years. We're going to talk about that a lot. But the next generation of top young talent that can play for the U.S. men's national team, it's already on the field now. I said on the call over the weekend, if Cooper Sanchez keeps growing at the way that he is and playing the way that he is, he's a senior national team player. No doubt in my mind. He has that ability. So let's bring it back home to guys like Cooper and what's going on at Atlanta United. And look, the results are not good for the first team right now. That doesn't mean everything is bad for the club. John Nelson sat down with Javier Perez. He's the director of methodology for Atlanta United on SDH AM this morning. I've spoken to him recently, talked to him off the record about the Atlanta United games this weekend at the Academy. He described with John this morning a program that is genuinely ahead of where most people outside the club realize. He's been here for 2 years. When he arrived, he looked at the Academy and he saw one, maybe two guys that had a realistic path to the first team. Now, Cooper Sanchez, Jonathan Ransom, both in the building, both still eligible to play for the U18s. Both are on first team contracts right now while they're still in high school. Perez talked about the U16 team, which is incredibly talented. They won the premier bracket at the Generation Adidas Cup. They beat Columbus in the final. They ran through Cincinnati, New York City, Montreal, Philadelphia. Talked about the U15s matching the level of Valencia before conceding a late penalty. Valencia, for context, had their U19s in the UEFA Youth League final against Real Madrid last week. Atlanta's U15s pushed the Valencia U15s. He described seeing four players from the 2010 birth year group that he thinks have genuine first team futures. I totally agree with him with what I've seen from that group. His two core challenges heading forward is he wants to get everyone on the youth side of the club aligned on a common philosophy. And I think we're starting to see that more and more and more. And creating the right environment for those talented players to actually break through into the first team. Perez said it plainly, like, this stuff doesn't happen because he's here, because one person is here. They get done because you build competent people around the common idea. Atlanta United's been doing that work quietly, and it's starting to see visible results. It's starting to see real payoffs right now with guys like Cooper Sanchez and guys like Jonathan Ransom. Now, in the clip I'm going to play for you, Javier lays out one of the biggest challenges in the pathway. You can identify, you can develop talented players, but you got to create that right environment and the right opportunities for them to break into the first team. That's the bridge between academy success and first team reality. Here's Javier Perez from SDH AM this morning.
That's a great question. I think there are a couple of things. One is getting everybody aligned. And that starts with the recruitment, not only of the players, but as well your staff, you know, and the ability to work in a team setting. As I say before, these things, they don't get done just because I'm here. They get done because, yes, I'm leading the project, but I have a lot of competent people around me that they are able to execute the ideas that we state together. And in order to do that, you need a common philosophy, right? And the second biggest challenge is now that we have those players that they have the ability, and remember that I've been working in world-class organizations prior, I think that the biggest challenge is how to give those opportunities to these talented players into the first team setting, you know? Mm-hmm. I know that these players, they have the talent and the ability to perform at that level. But then you have to lay out the right environment and the opportunities for those players to make it into the first team. You know,
it's not easy. And as we talked about, when it comes to coaches, they're under a lot of pressure. Usually you're going to go with a veteran who can get you out of some of that pressure because you think they can handle the moment and you might trust them more than a young player who will make mistakes. But the long-term payoff of playing those young players is so big, so important for a club's future. I think the other aspect of youth development is something that doesn't get talked about enough. And it's another voice I wanted to bring in from Atlanta United, Stuart Lathan. She is Atlanta United's player welfare and education officer. We talked today about 30 minutes, and we probably could have talked for a couple hours about what she does. And there's going to be an upcoming podcast and feature story on her role and how important it is to what happens with Atlanta United's academy. She spent 25 years in education before joining Atlanta United during COVID, and the academy needed someone to help build something from scratch. What she did is she built basically a school at the training ground. Now it is run in partnership with the Atlanta International School in Buckhead. Four dedicated teachers on site every day, 40 players enrolled this year, 25 graduates since the school started. The picture that she described of what the school actually does day to day is very important in the club. She talked about guys like Cooper Sanchez and Jonathan Ransom, who are on first team pro deals, Dominic Chonqui, Aiden Torres, current seniors as well, who are on first team deals. They're all finishing high school at the same time. Cooper and Jonathan missed 6 weeks of school last year for the U-17 World Cup. The structure that Stuart helped build and that the club supports made that possible. And Stuart made it clear that when she sees Cooper now, she reminds him that he's still got an English project due in 3 weeks so he can graduate. That's what Cooper's dealing with right now as a professional player and trying to graduate high school. Like, that's all of this. It's all interconnected. But the deeper point that we both kept coming back to you is that the development has to be holistic for it to actually work. Professional athletes don't get a long time in that career. You know, the average retirement age in MLS is very young. The school, with this partnership with AIS and the work that the club does off the field for these players, for their well-being. It's not just keeping players eligible. It's building people who will have something worth doing when the game is over for them. I want to play a clip from my conversation with Stuart Lathan about that, and really about just how difficult the odds are stacked against you to be successful as a professional player, and why everything that Atlanta United does off the field in this really matters. Here's Stuart Lathan talking about that.
Well, I tell, I tell these guys every time that the average retirement age for MLS is 31.
Yeah.
And the average playing time career at MLS is 2.5 years. Mm-hmm. So that, those statistics are, should scare them, even yeah. though they are 19 and they don't really understand that.
Yeah.
But I tell them this is going to end, and you should ask your parents if 31 is the, you know, is that the end of your life? Because yes. it is not the end of your life.
No.
And so I'm, one of my goals is to try to get these guys to think about what is going to happen after, after soccer, mm-hmm. Because soccer is 100% going to end for them. Yeah. And, one of the other great things I should say about having the proximity of the school located at the training ground is the players get to see some of the behind the scenes things that happen here at the training ground and get to see some roles mm-hmm. that they would never have even thought about. You know, I have Arjun come talk sometimes and talk about the statistics that he uses to do scouting mm-hmm. And maybe some of our more the math inclined student athletes can look and say, hey, I'm really into that. That mm-hmm. might be a good role.
All of that off the field element, one, helps the players be more complete on the field. In my conversation with Stuart, we talked about how the exposure for these players to the regular student body at Atlanta International School helps them understand how to hang out and talk and interact with people from different backgrounds and different parts coming from different parts of the world. And you're going to have that in a locker room. You're going to have that in a workplace. You're going to have that. You're going to need that skill in anything you do in your life. And I think all of these things help these players hopefully realize their potential, whatever that ceiling is for them, whatever that best version of themselves is. All of the work that Javier Perez and Stuart Lathan and everybody at the Atlanta United Academy do helps these players become the best versions of themselves. Like we're seeing with Julian Hall, like we're seeing with Cooper Sanchez, like we're seeing with all of these young players that are doing so well. It's so important for the work to be intentional. It's so important for the work to be done by competent people. It's so important for everybody to be pushing in the right direction. And I just love what's happening with Atlanta United on the academy side because it is moving in the right direction with purpose. Big thank you to Michelob Ultra for supporting the What's on Tap segment. And coming up next, we're going to close out with a little bit of structure, the 3-4-3, three local stories, four headlines from around the game, and three things that make me smile about it. All that's coming up next on Atlanta Soccer Tonight on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
If you're the type of person who wants data, not assumptions, Prenuvo's whole body scan gives you a deep understanding of your health. Screen for over 500 conditions, including many cancers, autoimmune disorders, neurodegenerative diseases, and more. Add blood panels to test over 80 biomarkers, and you've got information about your body you may never have had before. Book your scan at Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Life can feel overwhelming, but on my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, we're in it together. Every Friday brings you a new story. Listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.
It's time to wrap up tonight's show with the 3-4-3.
3-4-3.
Three local stories, four headlines from around the world, and three things that made you smile about the game.
Atlanta Soccer Tonight is on Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
Welcome back. Final segment of AST for April 21st. I'm Jason Longshore. We always try to end the show with a little bit of structure because tonight's one of those that's been all over the place. We've had Atlanta United. We've had NWSL expansion. We've had the career as a coach. We've had the career of youth development. We've talked about MLS. We've talked about so many different things. So we got to have a little bit of structure to close it out. And that's the 3-4-3. It's brought to you by Ford. Visit your local Ford dealer. Three local stories, four headlines from anywhere, and three things that make me smile that make this sport so worth it. Let's start on the local side. Atlanta United 2, huge 3-0 win in Bridgeview, Illinois, against Chicago Fire 2 on Saturday. Complete performance. 3-0 win. They're 4-2-1 on the year, 13 points, back-to-back clean sheets on the road. The story of the match for me was the press. Atlanta United 2 did not sit back and wait at all. They hunted the ball from the first minute. They made Chicago goalkeeper Owen Pratt uncomfortable all day. They turned that pressure directly into goals. Arif Kovac scored in the fourth minute, tracking Pratt to the top of the 18, top of the six, knocking the ball off of his foot into the goal as Pratt was trying to clear it. Kovac's second goal in as many starts. Cameron Dunbar, he added the second goal, 36th minute, off of Ignacio Suarez Corey's first career assist. And then Adrian Gill with a bombazo from 30-plus yards out, flew into the bottom left corner. First goal for an Atlanta United side for Adrian Gill. Kind of finish that changes how a player sees himself and maybe how coaching staffs see that player as well. Dominic Chonqui was the man of the match. He didn't get on the score sheet in terms of goals. He was a standout. He was a monster all up and down that left side. He was our man of the match on the SDH network. Next up for the twos, they are on the road on May 2nd. They've got the weekend off. They are headed to North Carolina to face Carolina Core. That has been a very interesting rivalry in the Southeast. That one's coming up on May 2nd. All right, number two, on the local side, high school playoffs beginning. The regular season ended last Thursday. So the coaches' polls for the end of the regular season came out on Sunday. Playoff picture starting to take shape, at least on the girls' side today. Johns Creek on the boys' side, number one, 17-1 overall. Lambert right behind them at two, Dalton at three, Carrollton at four, Johnson of Gainesville at five. They won in a penalty shootout over their crosstown rivals, Gainesville, on Thursday night. Clark Central, 14-0, perfect record. They are sixth in the state. That's worth noting on its own. Whitfield Academy, seventh in the state. This is all classifications at 17-1. Meadow Creek is 8th, Blessed Trinity 9th, and Decatur rounds out the top 10. Johns Creek and Lambert have both been dominant all season long. Clark Central, that unblemished record, one of the better stories in the state. The playoffs start tomorrow on the boys' side. We'll be covering all of it on the SDH network, at Soccer Down Here, where you get your social media posts, and you can also sign up for our free newsletter, The Morning Espresso. Go to soccerdownhere.net to do that. Let's stay on the high school side. Let's go over to girls action. The Week 10 coaches poll, the end of the regular season, has Walton at number one in all classification, 16-1. Marist at two. They're undefeated at 15-0. West Forsyth is three, Riverwood at four with a perfect record as well, their best in program history. Brookwood rounds out the top five. Blessed Trinity, six, Roswell, seven, Oconee County, eight, 18-1 overall, Wesleyan, nine, and Pike County, 10. Girls playoff action got started tonight. Here are some of the scores in the smaller schools, Model number three in 1AD1. They had a big 10-0 win over Harrelson County. Jeff Davis, number six in the state, 2-0 win over Oglethorpe County. We moved to 3A, and you had a bunch of upsets in 3A. Heritage Catoosa, 2-1 win against Peach County on the road. West Lawrence, 1-0 win at Bainbridge. That's an upset. Johnson of Gainesville, dominant. They go to Clayton County and beat Mount Zion 10-0. That was an upset, according to the rankings. Adairsville, they won 10-0 over Douglas of Atlanta. Dawson County, 4-0 win over Upson Lee. Monroe Area, 6-0 over Long County. Islands, that's an upset, 5-0 over Luella. Northwest Whitfield, they were favored. It was difficult for them, but they beat Southeast Bullock 3-2. Cherokee Bluff, another upset. They went into Fayette County and beat Sandy Creek 3-2. Sorry, Dylan Matthews. Other Shambly on the 5A side, 3-1 win over Chattahoochee. McIntosh, number 5 in their polls in the 5A side of things, 3-1 win over Kennesaw Mountain. Alexander's been one of the top teams in the state in 5A, 10-0 win over Langston Hughes. Loganville, 3-1 win over South Effingham. Boys at playoffs will start tomorrow. More from all week around the state. We will be in Henry County at Ola as they host Cambridge. It's funny how the brackets worked out. Both boys and girls host Cambridge. So Cambridge at Ola, girls at 6, boys at 8. You can listen to both of those at soccerdownhere.net/listen on Thursday night. Number 3 on the local side, UPSL Georgia. This is essentially the fourth division in the United States soccer pyramid. You can hear more from the executive vice president of the league, Nick Webster, who you might remember from Fox Soccer Channel. He knows the Atlanta Silverbacks very well as well. He's part of Atlanta Silverbacks history. You can hear a podcast that I did with him over on the Soccer Down Here side of things. But UPSL Georgia, 18 teams in the premier division, more in the next division. This has been a league that's been growing and growing and growing. Teams qualified for the U.S. Open Cup out of it this past year, Kalonji Pro Profile. They are leading the South Division. They've had a good start to the season, although they haven't really played the most difficult opponents as of yet. LSA Mustangs are leading the North side. That's been a little bit of a surprise. The other surprise has been Potros, who has struggled a little bit. They went 10-0 last year in the regular season. They don't have any wins through 4 games so far to start the spring season. Happens sometimes. You get player turnover. It's a league that is also getting better and better and better. LSA Mustangs has been one of the surprises. They are a new team kind of splitting away from LSA Norcross. They are perfect so far this season, have done really well. Georgia Impact, Pachuca, Georgia, 2 other teams in the North Division that are right there competing. On the South side, Kalonji Pro Profile are leading it. FC Columbus Elite, another kind of merged team, they're 2 points back. Georgia Revolution from Henry County are on 9 points, 3 points back. And Red Top SC, another new team in the division, they are 4th in UPSL Georgia on the South side. Make sure you're checking out ASMG TV on YouTube to watch a lot of these games and a lot of top talent from all around the state. All right, global headlines. Number 1. Premier League, Brighton, they beat Chelsea 3-0 today at the Amex, and it wasn't even close. Goal in the 3rd minute, 2nd after the hour. Danny Welbeck put a seal on it in stoppage time. Yeah, Chelsea were missing Reece James, Cole Palmer, Joao Pedro, but 5 consecutive Premier League defeats without scoring a goal. 5 straight losses without scoring a goal. The last time Chelsea did that was the year the Titanic sank, 1912. I don't remember hearing a stat like this ever. That's insane. Chelsea are in 7th place. They're 2 points behind Brighton. Champions League qualification hopes are essentially gone for Chelsea, and they need the money from being in Champions League. Bigger picture in the league, Arsenal, they still lead the Premier League on 70 points. Manchester City, 3 behind on 67 with a game in hand. Well, tomorrow, City travel to Turf Moor to face relegation-bound Burnley. A win sends them to the top of the table. Yes, Rodri is out with a groin injury. Ruben Dias is also sidelined. But City have won 14 of their last 15 against Burnley. Pep Guardiola said we must win our remaining games to have any chance. They won over the weekend against Arsenal. Tomorrow is one of those games. Number 2 on the headlines, Leicester City relegated back-to-back years. They were relegated into the championship last season. They are headed to League One next season. A 2-2 draw with Hull City. And a decade after they won the Premier League title, one of the great stories in sports in our lifetime, 5,000-1 odds, they won it. Now they are in the 3rd division next year. Crazy. Fans stayed behind to protest. Chants directed at the chairman was get out of our club. The same King Power Stadium that hosted an opera serenade before their title celebration in 2016 heard very different kinds of chants 10 years later. Sad to see. Number 3 on the headlines. have a little music crossover. FC Barcelona announced that Olivia Rodrigo will be the featured artist on their Spotify collaboration kit for El Clasico against Real Madrid on May 10th. Her logo will replace the standard Spotify branding on the front of the shirt. This is something that is part of the sponsorship deal with Spotify and Barcelona. Drake was first in 2022. The Rolling Stones have been on the front of the shirt. Coldplay, Carol G, Travis Scott. Olivia Rodrigo, the first solo American artist in the series. They're trying to get her to the match in person. The limited edition kit will reportedly run 500 euros. I don't know. Maybe make it not quite as limited edition and sell a whole bunch more, because Barcelona could use the money as well. They're in good shape, though, on the field. 9-point lead in La Liga. This Clasico is more about legacy than the title race. It's also really good timing for Olivia Rodrigo. She's got a new album dropping in June, right as the World Cup starts. So the timing is perfect for everybody. I did not know this as well, and this is very funny. Real Madrid fans have a kind of funny history with Olivia Rodrigo as well. This goes back to the 2024 Ballon d'Or ceremony, where Real Madrid was very upset that Vinicius Jr. did not win it, and Rodri of Manchester City did. People flooded Olivia Rodrigo's Instagram and got in all of her comments thinking she was Rodri. So Real Madrid does not like Olivia Rodrigo already for no reason. She might not like Real Madrid fans for a very good reason. And now it looks like her logo is going to be on the front of the Barcelona shirt for the May 10th game. I'm here for all of it. Should be entertaining. Number four, I need like an hour to recap everything. Hopefully you're a frequent listener of Atlanta Soccer Tonight, because FIFA has handed Botafogo another transfer ban effective today. Not anything to do with Atlanta United this time. An unpaid debt to Bulgarian club Ludogorets for the transfer of striker Juan Cruz, who arrived in February 2025 for 8 million euro, played 14 games, scored twice, and then was loaned to RSL and then back to Ludogorets. Botafogo never paid for him. Second FIFA transfer ban in 2026 for the club. First came after the failure to pay Atlanta United the $21 million at the time owed for Thiago Almada. There's a separate Brazilian court order preventing Botafogo from selling players. That is tied to John Textor's non-compliance with a November ruling. The club's chief financial officer resigned today. A scheduled general assembly for the club was postponed. According to O Globo, Textor is now trying to file for judicial recovery in a bid to separate Botafogo from Eagle Football and buy the club for himself. Eagle Football, which he started and now doesn't control and is now being run by creditors that he did not pay. They're opposing all of this. So, yeah, it's not good for John Textor, Botafogo, anybody involved in all of it. For Atlanta fans, the Thiago Almada thing is still out there. They have not, at least according to Brazilian media, because nobody's talking here in Atlanta about it, the Brazilian media says that they haven't paid the second installment of that, and there are financial penalties attached to it. Who knows what else? It's chaos. All the bills come and due at once, and John Textor has lost control of the plot. All right, John Textor does not make me smile. Three things that do make me smile about this game. Number one, Columbus being in the NWSL. Great soccer market. Very happy they're in the NWSL. Very happy to see that building used for the NWSL. I like Columbus as a rival for Atlanta's NWSL team coming in. It's a good thing for everybody. Number two, Adrian Gill's goal for Atlanta United 2, the bombazo from 30 plus yards. First goal for him in an Atlanta shirt. Collected it, measured it, he buried it. Just, it's the kind of confidence that I love to see from a young player, one that I've got really high hopes for. His Barcelona schooling is showing, and he's getting more and more comfortable every game that he plays. And tomorrow, look, I know there might not be a lot of expectation for Atlanta United and New England Revolution, but any chance that I get to call this team, and I've been fortunate to call every game since they started, it's a blessing. Saturday was a blessing, even with the very frustrating first team performance against Nashville. Very lucky to get to do this. Very lucky that we have this team in our city. Very lucky to see a young player like Cooper Sanchez coming into his own, Jay Fortune getting healthy. There are good stories about this team. There's not enough of them at the moment, but there are good stories about this team. If you can make it out to Mercedes-Benz Stadium tomorrow, make some noise for these players. They need it. They would welcome it. They need that support. They need a push. They need some help. Help them with your voices. Help them with some noise. Hopefully they can help you have a good time with some goals. We'll be talking about all of it starting at 6:30 for the Five Stripes Countdown, 7:40 for kickoff with me and Mike Conti. But thank you for hanging out with me for another edition of Atlanta Soccer Tonight. Adios, everybody.
Hey, it's Jen Hatmaker. Here's what I've learned in midlife. Joy isn't the reward you earn after all the work is done. Joy is the work. That's what this new series on For the Love is all about. The sacred, yes. It's choosing delight, rest, and pleasure on purpose. Because saying yes to yourself, that's the thing that finally lets you fill your table with everybody else. Come find your sacred yes with me. Follow and listen to For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.